the 13th, also known as the second Tuesday of the month. And on the second Tuesday of each and every month, we check in with our friends at the Canadian Mental Health Association, Waterloo Wellington, for a little checkup. And we keep an eye and an ear on our mental well-being. Helen Fishburne is the executive director at CMHA. Waterloo Wellington joins us in studio. It's great to see you again.
Hi, Mike. Nice to be here as always.
How's the summer been treating you?
It's been awesome.
It's good.
Busy.
Yes.
Really busy, but it's been gorgeous, and it's just, you know, it raises your spirits for sure when the weather's this nice.
It absolutely does. Yeah. I couldn't help but notice, I just got back from vacation. I was away last week, and as I'm getting up for work in the morning, which is before 6 a.m., it's not as light as it had been. We're kind of trickling down.
It's starting to change.
We're going to get into some of that back to school. I know how that sends shivers down people's spines, but we'll get into some of the back to school chat and what that means for mental health in a little bit. But I wanted to start, Helen, because though I was away last week, this is something that made its way all the way across the pond. It's not every day, of course, that the premier of the province comes to our community, which Doug Ford did last week, but there was something that he talked about, and for not the first time, used a term that I don't think is going to help anybody when we're having these important conversations about mental health. But he referred to an individual who had been detained at a mental health hospital for killing his roommate as an animal. And when asked about those comments, he doubled down on it and used it again. Yeah. How does that impact the work that we do in this area?
Well, it's a really good question, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because when those comments were made in our community, I feel like that's our community needs to respond. So I'm really happy we're speaking about it. So two things. First of all, we could talk in a minute about Premier Ford's concerns, because he was concerned about a public safety issue, right? So that is a legitimate concern, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But certainly the way he spoke about that, the language he used was very disappointing, and it takes us steps back from the progress that we've made. We've made significant progress. We've come a long way in terms of normalizing how we speak about people with mental illness. We are really, really mindful about our language. We know that people struggle with stigma around mental health in general. So then to apply this language on top of that, it just further prevents people from coming forward and sharing what their concerns are, sharing what their challenges are. It also somehow leads people to believe that people with mental illness are more violent, and they're not. We know that. The research shows that people with mental illness are no more violent than the general population. So we see what's happening in the States, and again, really, really inappropriate and aggressive language connected to people with mental illness. Premier Ford's comments were really unfortunate. We do not want to make that link in the public and in our community, because it's just not true. And it further prevents people from actually sharing what's happening for them, which is really the whole reason we're here.
Yeah, and I think, Helen, that is a very fair comparison when we talk about that kind of language sort of further marginalizing an already marginalized group of people and what that can do for the rest of us as we listen. Is that language okay? Do we have to treat people differently based on where they are at in their lives, etc.? So when it comes to the public safety concerns that you mentioned, there is a legitimate concern on the premier's part here. But so where was he getting this right?
Well, I mean, obviously the concern is someone who was in a psychiatric facility was released. And that person then created some more disruption and concern in our community, which is a legitimate issue. I can tell you that the forensic mental health system is often a subject of debate and public scrutiny, and it's cases like this where it gets certainly put in the spotlight. In Canada, a court determines if someone is not criminally responsible, so NCR. There is a significant amount of assessment and thorough understanding that goes into that process to determine if someone is NCR. And then that person is in, their status is reviewed by the Ontario Review Board, and the parameters and supervision and management of people who are NCR fall under that jurisdiction. So it's an extremely comprehensive process. That decision's not made lightly. Public safety is always the number one factor and criteria. So since this issue has happened, CAMH actually has announced that it will have an external public review around processes and procedures relating to NCR as well as the Ontario Review Board. So let's wait to see what they say on that process. Are there pieces of the process that need to be redefined, relooked at? What happened in this particular situation? They will do an extensive review and we'll know more. But certainly, you know, that public safety aspect is front and center in any kind of those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, and I think it's important to kind of drive that message home as well, that, as you mentioned, these are decisions that are not made lightly when somebody is declared NCR, not criminally responsible.
We always need to look at the system implications for those kinds of decisions, and we also need to be really mindful and careful of our language and how we communicate about our fears and concerns around that, right? It's not fair to group everybody with a mental health issue into that category unfairly, right?
Right, right. And I think we could say that about so many groups, right? Putting them all into the same category across the board doesn't
never
serve
helpful.
This person. Absolutely not. Okay, let's transition into one of the important conversations right now, as we are on August the 13th. And, you know, it's funny, we went for a walk, the family, after dinner last night, and we took a shortcut home cutting through the schoolyard that's nearby where our daughter attends. And she got a little bit anxious. She said, I don't want to be on these school grounds
yet.
And it reminded me of being her age. She's just turned 13. And the anxiety that comes with that return to school. And, and the formality of it all and the uncertainty of it all, even though she's going into grade 8 now. And she's kind of, you know, this is old hat for her. But what do we need to be aware of as we make this transition at the end of the month into the new school year?
Well, I think your point, Mike, is a really good one. Just having that awareness, right? Even just recognizing that your daughter and our daughter and other people's daughters and sons all feel anxious. And there's a continuum of anxiety, of course. There's some kids that feel a little bit anxious but mostly excited. And then there's other kids who feel mostly anxious and hardly excited at all, right? So your kids will fall somewhere in that continuum. I think the most important thing is to be tuned in to what your child is feeling and to ask them. Have a conversation. It doesn't need to be anything formal or confrontational. Just over dinner or having a walk in the park. Just casually as you're driving in the car. You know, how are you feeling about going back to school? What are the things you're looking forward to? What are the things you're not looking forward to? This might be a big year for you. How are you preparing? You know, all those kinds of conversations just to get kids thinking and transitioning in their minds. I think having them prepared for their schedule, what's their day going to look like? It might be a change for that child in terms of a new school or a new teacher, or it might be, you know, somewhat of the same. But just getting them thinking about that routine. It also, psychologists certainly recommend that at least 2 weeks prior to the school starting, you get your child back into the routines. So an earlier bedtime, healthier eating, and that's hard for kids, right? Because summer is so wonderful. You have this unstructured time. You can just be free and play. And it's fun for kids.
Yeah, it's fun for parents to some degree,
too. It's really fun.
Because, you know, it's funny. Our little one was with a friend yesterday, and she came home and said, we had pizza for lunch and for dinner.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what, but okay, so what?
Exactly, it's the summer.
Exactly,
yeah.
So we get to take, as parents, a bit of a break.
That's right.
Ourselves. But it's funny you mentioned that, sort of getting back into the routine, because I remember that vividly as a kid. And my parents started a week out, not two, but, and that's what it was. It's, here's your bedtime.
Yes.
Here's your waking time. And we just got right back into those routines. But routine, I think, really matters in this regard.
It really, really matters. And, you know, getting enough sleep and eating those healthy foods and getting your mind and body prepared, doesn't matter what age, whether you're in kindergarten or university, college, it's the same feeling and the same preparedness, right? And certainly reassuring your child, empathizing that it is tough to go back to school, and it's tough for parents to have to make lunches again, you know, get back into their routines as well, right?
Right.
So everybody's got to get back into that groove, and reassuring them that you get it. You understand that it is tough sometimes to transition back, and this is life, you know, and part of life and part of just, you know, being responsible, being accountable. Even at, you know, the ripe old age of 5, you have to go to school and there's responsibilities and homework and rules to follow and things like that, right?
Right.
You can also make a return to school fun, you know, make a play date with your neighbor or other kids in the area to walk to school on that first day, or to have a little bit of a party after school to celebrate that milestone. So there are ways to celebrate it and also recognize that it's a pretty big deal as well, in a really positive way. So you manage the anxiety and empathize and really talk with your child about it, but you also celebrate that it is really a good thing and something to be excited about as well.
So in our house, Helen, obviously it's an elementary school-aged child.
Yep.
How does it differ, if at all, from elementary school to high school to post-secondary, etc.?
Workload is probably the biggest difference, right? And we know kids these days, whether you're in, you know, grade 7, 8, or all through the high school years, the workload is significantly different than it was even when you and I were at school.
Absolutely.
There's a lot more pressure. Your grades have to be higher. Kids have a real strong career focus as well. A lot of them know what they want to do and where they want to go. And there are, you know, there are marks that you have to make to get into college programs or university programs. And that puts a lot of pressure on kids. And then you add the social media component on top of that, right? So workload is always an issue. So getting into some really good study habits as soon as you can, right out of the gate, when you start school. September, you know, likely will be another beautiful month of weather, we're hoping. And it's hard sometimes to come home from school and to crack down on the homework. And you don't want to get kids behind, right? If you get behind early in the school year, it's harder to play catch up. So getting into some of those really good practices and routines and habits as early in the school year as possible.
You know, I got to say, even just listening to this, it makes me, it gives me that little bit of anxiety because I remember, and I did not enjoy going back to school. It was a really hard transition for me. And I would always play games with myself because back then, there was something called the COE, the Central Ontario Exhibition, that came to town not far from my house. And summer would not be over until the COE arrived. But then the COE would arrive, and I'd go to the COE, and now it's like, oh my gosh, all that's left is going to school.
Yeah, it's so, kind of a rite of passage.
Absolutely. So as parents, no matter the age of our school-aged children, there are routines that we can reestablish. And we have to be, as you already mentioned, aware of the anxiety that can come with going back to school and being in touch, in tune with our children as they are making that transition. Is there anything else we should be watching for as parents to help ease this transition, make it a little more smooth?
Well, the most important thing for parents to be aware of is that your kids will pick up cues from you. So you have to model those cues. You have to model that you have confidence in your child. I've got this, no problem. You're off to school, even though they're anxious or worried. You got it. No problem. You're going to have a great day. You're going to ease in. You're going to get there. You know, so some of those messages are really, really important. There's also just a comfort that you have in terms of those routines. You know, if you're grumpy about routines and going back to some of those transitions, your child is going to be grumpy, right? So you have to model that. You have to kind of pave the way for your child to say, okay, yep. And it doesn't mean you have to be Pollyanna. But you have to be able to say to your child, yeah, I get it, it's hard, but we're all in this, we're all going to do it together, and it's all good.
Yeah, and we go through this each and every year.
We do.
Right?
We
so
do.
With kids at different stages of their scholastic careers, and every kid in the neighborhood's going to be going through the same stuff.
That's right. And the other thing as a parent to know that if you have multiple children, every child's experience is going to be different, right? And so you need to be tuned into each of your children. Because they are different. And again, somebody might love going back to school and be super excited, can't wait, whereas another child is really, really anxious and worried and overwhelmed with that process. So you'll need to adjust to your children's unique needs and respond accordingly. Also keep in mind that there are professionals that can help you through this, again, for those children that are really stuck and worried. And there's resources at the school. There might be a school social worker or a child and youth worker or just a really helpful teacher, as well as outside of the school system. There is counseling providers. Of course, you can always call here 24/7 as a parent if you feel like your child is really, really anxious. So there's lots of resources to help parents along.
Yeah, and just imagine with the way time flies, Helen, by the time you stop in again for our next monthly checkup, we're going to have already accomplished this transition. We'll be right back into the school year.
I feel like the summer has gone so fast.
It always does.
It really, really has. So you're right. things just keep rolling.
Yeah, well, it's good we can kind of lay this foundation for the transition that's just weeks away now, and always appreciate you stopping in, so we'll see you in about a month. Helen Fishburne joining us. She's the executive director of CMHA Waterloo Wellington. She joins us on the second Tuesday of every month at 11:30 for a little check on our mental well-being. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV.